Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 310. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
About to hopefully have some new dad power. Might be our last episode before another baby. We'll see. Due date's technically a week from now, but I think it's going to be like in the next couple of days. So we shall see. But yeah, you know how the baseball players sometimes come back with dad power. Hopefully that'll be the case for me with podcast and reading and all that good stuff. But yeah, it's here.
So what would dad power mean in terms of podcasting? Because I had both my kids before I started podcasting. My youngest was born back in 2016. So does that mean, like, for you, would you be like more Matthew McConaughey sounding or like more of a Southern accent? Like, what would that entail?
What does that entail? I don't know. Up in our downloads, getting more listenership. I don't know. I don't know how that would affect me or how I would affect that, but you never know. I had somebody DM me. They found our podcast for the first time. It's always called Puerto Rico. So they wrote to me via DM from Puerto Rico that somebody suggested our podcast to them and they really liked what they heard. Thank you, Eli, for reaching out to me from Puerto Rico. I think that's pretty sweet. So
yes. Hello to Puerto Rico, all of our listeners from Puerto Rico and everyone else around the world. Appreciate you all. I'm just wondering, like, is this going to happen while we're on a podcast? Like, we're recording, and all of a sudden we just hear a scream from the other room. Chris!
Yeah, I've got my phone just in case. She was nervous the other night. I was playing pickup basketball. She's like, you weren't going to have your phone, so you're playing. Yeah, but would have seen it between games. We'd have had enough time, I think. Right. But I'll have my phone up and active. At least I can see a notification if she texts me mid-pod.
Get down here. Grab the go bag. Mm-hmm. We're off. Yeah. So yep, soon the Tool Shed Nation will be one stronger with the birth of Chris's second child. But we get a lot to talk about tonight here that it's non-baby related. We got a lot of baseball players to talk about, as we do every episode. We're going to talk about some struggling star players. All of them are on the hitting side. All top 100 guys as well. A lot of star guys like the top 25, a few in the back end of the top 100. And then we'll finish up the show with three up, three down, as we always do on the Monday episode. And this week is pitchers. And so a lot of fun to listen to on your Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day to everyone out there. Hopefully you're having a good day with family. It's rainy up here, or going to be rainy up here, according to the forecast. So probably no cookouts or anything like that up this way. But hope you are all enjoying your day. Let's get right into it here, Chris. Number one, player, the number one pick this year in basically every league, except for that one random little bit of time when people were scared about the knee injury he had early in the spring training. Ronald Acuña Jr., who unfortunately just had another knee injury on the 10-day IL already. Hopefully it's not serious and causes him to miss multiple months or the rest of the season. Still waiting to see just how serious this ends up being. He said it reminds him more of his 2018 MCL sprain as opposed to his 2021 ACL tear. But I'm starting to get, this isn't a great comp, but like Derrick Rose vibes from the NBA, where it's just so much talent. I think Rose's were all knee injuries for the most part, too. First, can we trust Acuña's knee anymore? Looking past the production, which was already pretty mediocre, especially for a number one pick, coming off a 41 homer, 73 steal year where he slashed .337, .416, .596. This year, four home runs and 16 steals with a .250, .351, .365 slash line. Plus, just another knee injury. I think the big question for a lot of these guys, especially with Acuña, is what the heck do you do with Acuña in Dynasty right now, Chris?
That's a good question. I think that you, obviously, if you're in win now, you try to sell and get what you can. I remember in 30 Rock when Acuña went down with that first tear, he went for, I don't even remember the trade, but I think that I know Jesse Roach was involved and maybe Nick Savali. I think it was like Tatis and Acuña in a swap there. Maybe you don't get Tatis this time because it's, again, a kind of a mounting list of injuries at this point. But I do think that you could still probably get a decent return for Acuña. Maybe not a top 10 asset, but still, I still think you're going to get something pretty good. I don't know. I look at this and I think that, does this stem from the spring injury? I don't know. There was somebody on Twitter, a Braves kind of reporter, that said from a source that in spring training they were told that Acuña had a partially torn meniscus. And if that's the case, then he's been playing on a partially torn meniscus for a while and just popped it. It's just done now. It's never a good thing. I think that you look at this situation and say, all right, obviously Acuña's stock's got to tank a little bit because of the consistent injuries and the consistent knee injuries at that. So where do you rank Acuña for Dynasty now? And what would be the bottom dollar that you would sell for right now if you're in win? Now, obviously, if you're rebuilding, you may just sit on him. If you weren't continuing to win anyway, it's a crappy spot to be that you don't have a star player, but just put him on the IL, assuming most dynasty leagues have an IL spot. But if not, what do you do?
I wish I had an answer to that question. I really don't, because we've seen like the upside is higher than any other person in all of baseball. And yes, that includes Ellie De La Cruz. Acuña almost went, I think, what, 41-73 last year. And I think there was more upside in the tank with the power. He could have went 50-75 this year and it wouldn't surprise me. But I'm just so worried about the knees now. This is what, his third? It's at least his third knee injury. Is his fourth? I can't remember. But bare minimum, three knee injuries, one of which obviously was much more serious than the others, at least so far. We don't really know what this will turn out to be. But hopefully it's on it. I don't think it's an ACL tear. But you look at 2022 when he was coming back from the 2021 knee injury, he was good. He was all right across the board. Then he had the massive 2023. And you see, in 2019 was his other massive year when he went 41-37. So he said the two massive years. In 2021, he was on pace for another massive year, then had the knee injury. So we'll call it 2.5 massive years. The rest has been very inconsistent in terms of playing time. He's only exceeded 120 games twice in his career, and this is now his seventh season in Major League Baseball. And I don't have him number one anymore. I didn't think this number one thing would be a debate so soon after his 41-73 year, as good as guys like Soto and Witt, Ellie obviously getting up there now, and Otani, etc. As good as all those guys are, it was like Acuna was number one. Like, he was tier one by himself. And then it turned on the big, all right, now these other guys are in the same tier as him. Now, I don't know. He's still going to be top five. I don't think I can drop him out of the top five. Not yet. But is he number one anymore? No, I'm putting Bobby Witt Jr. at number one right now. And I've seen others that have put Neil Cruz one. Tani can make a case for one, depending on format. So it's a real open debate right now, depending on your league style and format. But I would trade him in Dynasty. If I was win now, would you go below top 20 guy?
No, I think that's probably my floor would be a top 20.
So we're talking, like, would you trade him for, who would make sense here? I don't know, like a Corey Seager, Luis Robert type, or is that too low for you?
Probably would take Seager. Robert has his own issues of injuries. Right. So I don't love that one, but yeah, let's talk about this. Let's look at the history of injuries, because 2018 in May, he had a sprained ACL in the left knee. That's back to 2018. July 2018, groin injury. May of 2019, back. September of 2019, strained left groin, which ended his season. August of 2020, sore left wrist. He hit the IL for wrist inflammation. And when he came back from that, he had right hamstring injury at the very end of August 2020, but he returned to the lineup within 5 days. The wrist flared up again at the end of the 2020 season. 2021, he had a strained abdominal. He also had an ankle injury. He had tightness in his lower back. He then had the torn ACL in July, which ended the year they went on to win the World Series without him, crazy enough. Then he came back from, he was activated in April of 2022. He had a left groin injury again in May of 2022. Quadriceps, May of 2022. He had general soreness in June of 2022. Left foot, June of 2022. He had a knee injury again in August of 2022. Right calf injury, end of last season, September of 2023. And then obviously the knee again this spring training in 2024. So it's a pretty extensive injury history, sadly. Like, for the player, his talent. Yeah, that was a lot. I did not expect it to be that much when I went and searched it.
That's like Byron Buxton levels of injuries. Not to comp his durability to Buxton, but that's what I was feeling when you were listening up all those injuries. I'm like, man, is he talking about Buxton right now or Acuna? Because that's insane.
Yeah, it's concerning, to say the least. I can't sit here and tell you that I'm confident anymore that he's a top 10 guy, especially if it's a meniscus, if it's a ACL again, and hopefully it's not. Like, he said he didn't hear anything pop, but we won't know anything till the MRI. But still, this is a very extensive injury history that's not been talked about all that much. So I can't ignore that.
No, you can't, because it's cost him major chunks of several different seasons now. It's been like one or two. This has been like, you just listed them all off. He's lost a lot of time because of these injuries. Yeah, I mean, just looking at it's not a lot of outfielders in this range. Hard to match up a guy there, but maybe like a Joe Ram, but Devers, Riley, someone in that range. Like, would you trade him for another Atlanta outfielder, Michael Harris, Chris?
Potentially. If we knew that Acuna was out for the year, I would. I think maybe the potential time to cash out and get the best values right now, because we don't know. It could be a couple, 4 weeks. We don't know. So maybe somebody buys him hoping it's 4 weeks. But I think Harris is teetering on that range where it's like, I don't know. But I think Harris hasn't been great, but I do think that Harris bounces back.
Yeah, it's tough regardless. But yeah, I think we're both in a similar mindset where top 20 is the lowest we'd go to sell in a win now. But yeah, it's getting rough. Obviously, the highs are great. Anyone that had Acuna last year, regardless of redraft dynasty, had a great leg up on the competition with that one player to start. But outside of there, it's been more downs than ups, which is sad to say with a generational talent like Acuna. But another guy who's starting to pick it up a little bit lately, starting to hit a couple more home runs, but overall still a very underwhelming season. Julio Rodriguez coming off back-to-back 25-25 seasons, including a 30-30 season last year when he finished with 32 home runs and 37 steals. This year, full home runs, 11 steals, 260, 306, 340 slash line. Even though the 24 home runs. So the power numbers on the surface are down. He only has a 340 slug, a 080 ISO. But under the hood, barrel rate's down about 3.5%. But exit velocity is right in line with the previous 2 years. Hard hit rate is down a couple percentage points, but still nearly 50%. Still has a 90th percentile sprint speed as well. But you look at some of the big differences this year, and they're not even like major. It's like zone contact's down about 4%, overall contact about 3.5%, K rate's up 3.5%, walk rate's down 1.2%. So there's not like these glaring, oh, zone contact's down 9% or K rate's up 8%. There's no big differences like that, or you'd think like the hard hit rate's down 12% or something like that. It's just he's hitting the ball. There's not an ideal launch angle. It's not even a super high ground ball rate either, because that's actually lower than last year. But overall launch angle is 7.9 degrees. He's just not getting it done. But he's the one out of most of these guys that I'm the most encouraged by. You still got a lot of red. Like bat speed is elite. Everyone loves the new bat speed metric. Yeah. He's in the 96th percentile there. So, you know, J-Rod's he's a hold for me, because obviously, right now, you'd be selling for 95 cents on the dollar, which is not advised with Rodriguez. I think he is starting to turn it around. Maybe is he not a number two overall player? Sure, I guess we could have that conversation. But is he still a top 10 talent? Absolutely. So, yeah, Rodriguez is a hold for me.
I would agree. And I think he's picking it up. He's been better as of late. If I'm not mistaken, he homered today on Sunday, and that's back-to-back games. With home runs, he did have 3 hits on Sunday as we're recording this today, including that home run. He's got 3 home runs in May, which is still, man, it's improvement. He's hitting 265 this month. You obviously want to see that higher. You'd love to see him run a little bit more. He's stolen 4 bases this month, and that's including 2 today. So that's another, it seems like he's picking up a little bit there. But as you mentioned, the contact is a little bit concerning to me. The sweet spot rate's not ideal either. He's a little bit below average zone contact-wise. His overall contact rate is well below MLB average right now. That's a little bit concerning. The chase rate, he can live with. There's certain guys you can live with a higher chase rate because they do hit the ball as hard as they do, but he has got a very low out-of-zone contact rate. At the end of the day, like, I'm not that worried about Julio Rodriguez. He's still 23. He's healthy. He hasn't shown any signs of, you know, injuries in the past. We're going to knock on wood that he stays healthy here. And I do think the better days will be ahead. So I would say it's a potential buy low option if you can get him on the cheap.
Yep, 100% agree there. This next one is the one someone tweeted at me earlier. Was it earlier today or the day before? I can't remember. But basically asking, what the heck do we do with Corbin Carroll? Another one where it's not a great answer, because Carroll might be the first guy, I don't think it's happening anytime soon, but he might be the first top 5 pick in the history of fantasy baseball to be dropped at some point during the season, not because of injury, just because he's that bad. And he was terrible in April, but all right, maybe the shoulder's still bothering him a little bit. Maybe he'll get it going. Nope, he's been even worse in May. In April, 188, 261, 248. In May, 175, 236, 313. So I guess the slug's gone up, but average and OBP have gone down. We're still looking at overall 188, 274, 284 slash line. 2 home runs. He isn't even running that much anymore. He had 6 steals, 8 if you include March. So 8 by the end of April, and then 1 so far in May. And it's hard to steal a lot of bags when you have a 236 OBP for the entire month. Speed is still there. Bat speed is still pretty good. Overall, the approach is solid, but the quality of contact just has taken an absolute nosedive. 87 mile an hour average exit velocity. Hard hit rate's dropped about 7 percentage points as well. You got to imagine, Chris, that the shoulder is still, whether it's hurting him or it's more of a mental thing that he doesn't want to re-injure the shoulder. I'm not quite sure which one it is, but you got to imagine that the shoulder is factoring in to this performance somehow. And I don't think last year was an entire fluke either. This was the number one prospect for a lot of people before, you know, he debuted and later on in 2022. So don't think that was entirely a fluke, but man, what the heck do we do with Carroll? That's a great question. And he's hard on the rank for me right now, you know, in all formats. I still have him top 20 overall for Dynasty, but now starting to question, should I even have him that high?
Yeah, obviously, I think it is worth discussing. He was very elite last year. He was elite as a rookie at 22 years old last year. So I think that a player this caliber doesn't just forget how to hit. So right. That is something that's worth noting here, that I don't think that Carroll just forgot how to hit or make contact or even run. He's not stealing at all, which I kind of tells me there's something else going on, that he stopped stealing. He was stealing early in the year. I think when guys are dealing with shoulder stuff, they're not going to steal as much. The risk to screw it up sliding in head first. So it's not been good at all for Corbin Carroll. I thought he would pick it up in the month of May. We're up to 93 plate appearances at this point. One homer, total of one stolen base, caught twice, and hitting 181, 247, 337 this month. So nothing there looks great. Nothing is improving, which is obviously something you would like to see. When you start out that slow in April, you want to see it improve. And while the slash line is better, he's slugging a little bit higher. He's getting on base less, and the average is down, but it's not improving. The bat speed's still good, which is bizarre. Like, how is your bat speed good if you're dealing with a shoulder issue? I don't know here. That's why I keep looking through this. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on with Corbin Carroll. I can say this. Carroll last year, I think, perfected the pulled fly balls. He's not a super like big exit velocity guy. He did have a 90-mile-an-hour average EV last year. That's pretty good. This year's dropped 3 miles an hour, but he also got to the pull fly balls so much more. This year, his fly ball rate has dropped 6 percentage points. The pop-up, which is poor fly balls, like that aren't going to, don't have a chance of dropping for hits. They're going to basically stay in the infield. That is up 6 percentage points. So he's just flopped, or he's not even fly balls. He's eating pop-ups at very poor launch angles. The contact is also something interesting to look at. The zone contact rate is right in line with where he was last year. And the overall contact rate is actually better. It's so interesting. I would be lying to you if I said I had a clue what was going on here. I don't want to speculate he's hurt. Like, that's not my job. I'm not as, a doctor or whatever. I don't know if he's hurt. He may be. I think we can potentially assume, but I don't want to do that. Because I don't think that if he's dealing with a major shoulder injury, he's swinging the bat on average 74 miles an hour in the upper 20th percentile of the league. I just don't see that. But everything else is just weird to look at. Like, it just doesn't add up. And I'm struggling with answers here. Where do you rank him? What do you do with him? I think that if you're not contending, you could look to buy. Again, it's dynasty. We're looking at the long run. He did absolutely elite things as a 22-year-old last year. And I have a hard time believing that he can't get back to that. But if you're contending, Corbin Carroll sitting on your team, do you sell for a borderline top 100 asset? I don't know where his value falls. I'd be curious. If you're listening and you've seen Corbin Carroll traded in your dynasty league, please tweet at us. I'd love to know what he went for, because I have zero idea. I really have no idea where his value lies right now, to be honest with you. So that would be helpful. If he's been traded in your league, what was the deal? Let us know. So yeah, my rant is all that to say, I'm at a complete loss here of what's actually going on.
I mean, you're not the only one, but yeah, I would love to see that too. Yeah, tweet at ToolShedPod, at RotoClegg, at AirCross04. I would love to see some of those trades that he's been involved in over, let's say, the last month or so especially, or just this year in general, but the more recent, the better, because obviously the more prolonged sample size of him just being atrocious really factors in. With Carroll, I wish we would have had bat speed last year. I want to see, is it bat speed down from last year? This is really good. It's going to be a good tool. That's one thing I'm most interested in. For the most part, you look at guys that are ranked highly in that bat speed leaderboard, and you're not really surprised by a lot. Oh, yep, Stanton's a mile and a half ahead of everyone else, and all the top home run hitters are there. There are a couple of surprises here and there, but for the most part, one of the kind of underrated things I was most excited about when they said they were going to do this is seeing changes year to year that could tell an injury, or maybe someone's dealing with something, or to see, like, hey, this person added bulk. Is that paying off with more bat speed? Those are the type of things I'm really intrigued to see once we get a second year of bat speed data next year. So we'll see. But with Carroll, yeah, like I said, we both agree that he last year wasn't a fluke. Was number one prospect, was a high draft pick, was a mid first round pick, had huge numbers in the minor leagues and huge numbers in his debut or first full season debut last year. And even was pretty good in his cup of coffee with Arizona late in 2022. So a guy that had 29 home runs and 56 steals in his first 760 plate appearances. I don't think that's magically gone forever, but I do think, like I said, whether it's he is hurt, it's mental, I don't know. But I would, plus your, how low would you trade for him, acquire for him? And we said top 20 with Acuna. Would you go, you'll go a little lower than top 20 with here with Carroll, but what do you think, top 30 to 40? I don't want to sell too low on Carroll, just given the upside and that he's still 23 years old. So I don't think I'd go lower than like top 30 to 40 or so, but what do you think?
If I was selling him, I probably would hold unless I got like a top 50 asset. Now, what does that look like? Who would I look to get for him? Oh man, that's hard too, because the weird thing is so many top guys have been struggling. It's so weird to look at and see. I was like Randy Arozarena. Like he's probably going to go 25-25 again, but he's currently hitting 156 with a 253 OBP is killing you. So what would I look to get? Would I try to trade for a struggling O'Neill Cruz? Probably not, because I don't really believe in Cruz enough to make a deal like that. Would I trade him for... Do you have your rankings up?
I do, yeah. Would you do Riley Green?
Yeah, I would take Riley Green, actually. I know he's not been as hot recently, but I would take him. I still believe in that profile.
Would you... This is tough, because like everyone in this range where I'm looking is either like young and unproven or not doing so hot themselves. How about... This would be a fun one, because they're about 11 years apart in age. Would you trade him for like Jose Altuve?
Probably on a contender. Altuve is just so consistent year over year.
What about Adelis Garcia?
Yeah, I think I'd take Adelis.
What if you were in need of a pitcher, would you trade him for, let's go with like a Zach Gallen?
Yeah, I would take Gallen. I think those are guys that can help you now.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's like, I just listed enough guys. Like Green was 33 in my rankings, and then I was going on to the mid 46 to 48 range. So, yes, I think that's like the range we're looking at here, low 30s to mid upper 40s, but yeah. I still think he's a turning around, but I just don't know when. Is this a situation where he gets shut down eventually, has surgery? I don't know. Don't want to speculate on that, but I don't know when the turnaround is going to come, if it's going to be this year or next year, but it's getting really rough. And next guy on the list, as Chris already alluded to, Randy Arozarena, who is 156, 253, 313, a guy that had some additional buzz entering the year and you know, put on weight in the offseason, good weight. And everyone, and I was buying into that myself too. This is a guy that was starting to get, after being really overhyped after his 2020 postseason, started to get a little undervalued as a guy that was just consistently 20-20, 23-22 last year, 20-32 the year before that, and averaged in the 250-260 range. That's what he was cuddling in as. And now he's still on pace for about 23, 24 home runs and 21 steals or so. So on pace for another 2020 year. But as I tweeted out about a week ago, it would be the lowest average in a 2020 season by a long shot in the history of baseball. So it's really, and I'm really discouraged just with some of the metrics here. Quality of contact, it's gone down 5% down in the barrel, 7% down on the hard hit. It's still, there's still good metrics. It's not like the terrible quality of contact metrics, but you look at an already low 76.5% zone contact last year, is now below 70% at 69.7%. Overall contact rates around 65%. These are not, obviously not good. Strikeout rates up near 30% now after being in the 24% range the last 2 years. I don't know what I want to do with the Rosarena, because it's almost like some red flags that were there that we weren't ignoring but didn't put a lot of stock in are now getting redder, to the point where, does he make enough contact to get back to that 260 range? I'm not sure. But what are your thoughts here on Randy?
Yeah, he's one that's – it's sad watching him deteriorate over the last – it was even the second half last year that really wasn't all that great. And he's carried into this year, and it's not been good. He hit 220 last year post-All-Star break and slugged 369, so it was a 700 OPS. I know the season still looked good last year overall, but the struggles have been going on for a little while now. And he's still hitting the ball hard, but he's hitting the ball at less ideal launch angles. His sweet spot rate is one almost the worst in the league. It's almost the very bottom, 23% in the ideal sweet spot area. It's not great at all. It's a lot of ground balls. It's a lot of pop-ups. It's a lot of not a lot of line drives, which you want to see for a batting average standpoint. So while he's still hitting the ball hard, it's really not resulting in anything at all, because he's just not making good quality of contact there. It's a weird profile at this point. Like, the contact rates have absolutely deteriorated. It was zone contact. 2022 was 78.4. 2023 was 76.5. And then this year it's down below 70%. Overall contact rates have dropped 6 percentage points this year. They're pretty similar in 2022 and 2023. And this year it's very bad. So I am a little bit concerned. He still seems too young to just be like falling apart completely. But there's certainly reason to be concerned about Randy Arozarena right now.
He's not like that young though. He's 29, but
yeah, he's not. You don't expect a hitter to fall off though at 29,
right? Yeah, absolutely. You know? Right, but it's really, yeah, like you mentioned, he's been bad. Not a full calendar year now, given the struggles end of last season. Maybe this should have been something that we put more stock in. Was how he finished last year. I don't think it really affected his draft slot one bit. He was still, I think, a top 50. ADP guy in redraft league. I think his ADP was probably in the 40 range, if I had to guess, and probably like a top 15, even higher than that for outfielders. So, yeah, it's been really rough. Luckily, I don't think I have him in any leagues, but I think I was trying to acquire him in one league. So thankfully, that didn't work out. But, yeah, it's been – those contact rates need to improve. The K rate, while it's high, it's still under 30%. It's not like it's 35% or anything like that. But those contact rates are very worrisome. And if you don't start seeing those kind of – correct themselves and make some improvements there to get even back to the range where he was, I'm gonna be even more worried about Randy Arozarena. Last two names we have before we hit three up, three down are both first basemen, one young, one old. We got 24-year-old Spencer Torkelson, who homered today, and 36-year-old Paul Goldschmidt, who looks like the golden days for him are out the window. But let's start with Torkelson here. So he hit his fourth home run today, and I feel like, and I tweeted this too, like every time he has hit any home runs this year, like any of those four, it's like, oh, is he back? Well, okay, let's chill for a second here and let him actually heat up for longer than a game or two before we start saying he's back or start buying back in, because I'm concerned. Because first off, looking at a guy, 1,300 plate appearances now, he's a 221 career hitter with a 300 OBP. Yeah, he looked good second half of last year, ended up with 31 bombs, and drove up his perceived value heading into this year. But maybe he's just not that good. I'm not saying he's bad, but maybe he's just not the guy that everyone kind of hopes that he's going to be. I mean, yeah, he's still only 24, but that ballpark is not doing any favors. And the quality of contact this year is just straight up bad. 3.5% barrel rate, 38.5% hard hit rate. The barrel rate's really bad. Hard hit rate's okay, but that's a drop of 12.5%. Barrel rate dropped 10.5%. EV is down nearly 3 miles an hour. XBA of 195, X slug of 320. So it's not like he's unlucky or anything like that. He's just, bad. Look, there's a lot of blue in that Savant page outside of the chase rate. Still a solid bat speed. That's the other one in the red there. I've never been a huge Torkelson guy. So even when he was like at peak value late last season and then this offseason, I probably still had him lower than most, but yeah, he's going to turn it around. But to what level? Is turning it around and being a 230 hitter with 30 home runs? that's not like super valuable in this day and age for fantasy baseball, especially as a guy that provides zero speed. So he's not top 100 for me. He's still top 150 for now, but holding on by a thread. But I don't know. Where do you value Torkelson now, given what we've seen this year, Chris?
It's a good question. Like, what is Spencer Torkelson going to be moving forward? And I think that's my concern, is last year is going to be end up being a major outlier, because even though he's, quote, picked it up this month in May, still getting on base below 300 at 281 mark. Yeah, there's been four home runs this month, which is pretty encouraging. He did hit one today on Sunday as we are recording this, but still, he's striking out. He's not getting on base. There's a lot of reasons to be concerned here about Torkelson and what he actually is going to be long term. I don't know, but I will say, like, this kind of profile is going to have to hit. First base only, going to have to give you something. If you're not getting power, which really hasn't been hitting the ball all that hard, the barrel rate's at 3.5%, you got to at least put some balls in play, and the contact's not all that great either. The interesting thing is the contact rates are in line with last year. It's weird to look at that and see, because, you know, they're still below average right now. And when you're not making any impact with the bat, it's really reasons to be concerned. The launch angles are terrible. The sweet spot rate is not good right now. It's way less line drives than last year, more pop-ups, more grounders, just a lot of inconsistencies. He has pulled a lot of balls. He has virtually got like minimal hits to the opposite field right now. I don't know. I'm just not sure this approach can actually work. I'm not really looking to, you know, go out and try to get him right now. I think I'm fading him even more.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely there with you, because I've never been a big Torque guy. And even last year, I'm trying to look at, I think he was struggling pretty good until the last, yeah. So up until August, it was more of the same from him last year. Then he had 16 home runs combined in August and September. The average was still
cut. That's a lot.
Yeah. So like he had over, what did he have, 31 years? So half of his home runs last year came in those 2 months. He wasn't terrible, but he had 15 home runs entering August. Looks like the average probably would have been, I don't have the game log up, I'm just going off month by month, but probably like 225 or so, and it ticked up good 7-8 points end of the year. But outside of those 2 months, he's been really mediocre and does not play in a good ballpark for power. So even if he does get it going again, he's limited by that. And I don't see him ever being top 100 again in my rankings. And I think there's a better chance end of this year, I think there's a better chance he's post 200 than inside my top 100. I'll definitely say that. Last guy here before three down, Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, we knew Father Time catches up to everyone, especially baseball players in their, you know, 30s, mid 30s, 36 years old, like Goldschmidt is. But I did not think the demise of Goldschmidt would be this quick and this drastic, because even last year he started going down, but still 268. 25 home runs, 11 steals. He was still pretty good, top 10 first baseman. But this year, my word, I don't think he's even like a top 30 first baseman right now. Four home runs, three steals. Okay, so he's still running, give you three steals. 216, 294, 311 slash line. Barrel rates dropped from 12 to 5%. Hard hit rates down. Though the hard hit rate and average EV are still solid, but at the same time, he's striking out 31.5% of the time. I never thought I'd see Goldie striking out at above 30% clip, but do you think there's still any value here, Chris? Is Goldie done? Is he cooked? Or would you, as a contending team, now you could probably get him for really cheap right now, would you look to maybe buy and hope that he can give you something moving forward?
Oh, man, it's been really bad. Like you said, it was hard to imagine the demise of Goldschmidt happening so quick. And that's the thing. Like, these guys get over 35, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, he looks completely lost. And the swings are non-competitive at all. Let's see. You can look at the bat tracking and see how many. Surprisingly, he doesn't have more swords, just like non-competitive swings at all. He's only got four. But I'll tell you, I've seen some really ugly swings from Goldschmidt so far. I don't know. It's weird to look at. I don't think I'm buying at all, honestly. I don't see anything here that makes me interested in Goldschmidt. Things haven't looked up at all. They've actually gotten worse in the month of May. So, yeah, it's not good. I'd rather just be out on him at this point.
So you wouldn't even look to buy low if the price was like maybe what if someone came up to you and said, hey, I'll give you a Goldie for back end top 100 prospect. What would your response be?
Give you Goldie for, yeah, I would say no, being honest. I guess I just don't want anything to do with it. I don't think he helps your team in any way. He's slugging .311 right now. There's nothing here that I see.
I mean, I'm holding out a little bit of hope just because the hard hit rate is still decent, still EVs over 90. So I'm hoping maybe because I have a share of Goldschmidt in Dynasty Leagues and the Highlander, I acquired him in the offseason, which is not working out well so far, though I can't remember what I gave up for him, to be honest with you. But yeah, it's not looking great right now for Goldie, and 31% K rate is just very un-Goldie-like. But now we move on to three up, three down with hot or cold pitching prospects over the last few weeks or so. And we start with Zebby Matthews, 6'5", 24-year-old right-hander, eighth-round pick by the Minnesota Twins back in 2022 out of Western Carolina University in Cullowhee. Is that how you say that, Chris? Cullowhee. Cullowhee. There we go. It's a southern sounding name I've ever heard one, but phenomenal season so far. Had a pretty solid 2023 as well between low A and high A. Went back to high A at the start of the year. Was there for four starts and bumped up to double A. In seven starts total, 40 and a third innings. He has a 1.34 ERA and 0.67 whip. That's not even the most impressive part of the stat line, though. How about a 51-1 strikeout to walk ratio? That is, I don't think I've ever seen a 51-1 strikeout to walk ratio or anything even remotely close to that. That is phenomenal. Last year, it was 112 Ks to 15 walks in 105 and a third innings. He's skyrocketing up prospect rankings right now, Chris. He went very high in the post 100 pitching prospect mock we did with Jesse Roche a few episodes back. Arrow is definitely pointing up in a hurry for Mr. Zebby Matthews right now.
Yeah, I think I took Zebby Matthews, actually.
Was he? I couldn't remember if it was you or Jesse.
Second overall, I took Zebby Matthews, and he's gotten better since, which is wild. He's gotten way more buzzy. But the only reason I was in on him so early was just because the stuff had ticked up so much. Like, yeah, the results were fun, but we're talking somebody that just turned, the beginning of the year, was 23 in double A. And actually in high A, sorry for that matter. So it's okay. Like a 23-year-old in high A is doing this. That's fun. Let's give him a double A. And I think that our draft was probably after one double A start. I don't know exactly, but
yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
The fastball is up 2 ticks. So that's obviously a big thing. He added a sweeper this year. So like just having that intel from being in Twins camp this spring was helpful. And I was like, okay, like Zebby Matthews was good last year. Yeah, he didn't walk a lot of batters. He has good command and strike throwing. But how's this going to fare actually against good competition? Because he was in single A for a lot of last year and high for the latter part of the season. But it certainly looked the part. Fastball's averaging 95.5 right now, which was never close. Like he was never close to that four. He would touch like 95, but now he's sitting over 95. I think that's huge. It's a really big, durable starter's frame at 6'5". This is a big dude, 6'5", 225. He repeats. It's just really good stuff, too. The stuff is significantly better than it was last season. The whip is at 0.67, which is wild. As you mentioned, one batter walked this year. It's just really crazy to look at. Not only is this just somebody that's just knows how to command it in the strike zone, he's so much more than that. Like we're not talking about somebody that's just throwing easy strikes and are getting hit. He's allowed 26 hits all year and has a 179 batting average against. Like, Zebby Matthews is very good. I think Zebby Matthews has an argument and might be in my top 75 overall for prospects, because what else do you want to see from him at this point? He's pitching in the Texas League, a super hitter friendly environment. and he's got elite command. I think you could argue he has the best command control of any pitcher in the minors. Not only that, the stuff's really good too. I think it's above average stuff across the board. So I don't know what else that we actually want to see at this point, but I'm pretty intrigued. I will say, though, so far in Double A, I said Texas League, he's made two starts at home in Wichita. So that's obviously not ball flying in Texas. And he's made one in Tulsa, which that's a good Tulsa lineup, too, that he pitched pretty well against. So I will say, do the numbers get inflated a little bit when he pitches in the summer in Texas, some road trips to Texas? Maybe. But you can't argue the command. You can't argue the stuff right now.
He is giving me real, like, 2023 Christian Scott vibes.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
You could have just taken your entire, what you just talked about, taken out any reference to Zebby Matthews, and people would have thought you're talking about, this was a podcast from August of 2023, and we were talking about Christian Scott. And there's a lot of similarities there. Scott wasn't a guy that was wowing anybody. Doesn't have Paul Skeen stuff or anything like that, but just good stuff across the board and just commands it incredibly well. And Matthews got a bit older as well. And that's what kept his value in check a little bit, was the older age. And Matthews just turned 24 a few days back on the 22nd of May. So he's an older, quote unquote, older prospect, which keeps his value in check. And I was even too low on him. I'm correcting that in my rankings now. But yeah, it's phenomenal what he's done. And you can't argue with a 51-1 strikeout to walk ratio. That is just absolutely insane. One home run allowed, 26 hits and 40 in the third innings, just not letting anybody on base. And that is super high floor. Love to see that. And so just cranking out some pitchers over the last handful of years. And then Matthews is another one on the way here. Probably won't see him this year, but maybe early next year we see Zebby Matthews. Similar to Scott's timeline this year, I think that's what Matthews is for next year. Next one here, our first down of the episode. Looking at Will Warren here, who was a name that had some hype coming into the season as a guy that people thought could be up fairly early with the Yankees if there was an injury. Obviously, there was Garrett Cole. There's another injury or poor performance. You know, Warren had a pretty good year last year in 2023, 3.35 ERA. But this year, it is 7.62 in 9 starts for AAA Scranton Wilkes-Barre. And like that number is just going up. Yes, he started the season bad first start, but outside of that, like starts 2 through 6 were all right. He gave up 7 earned runs in those 5 starts combined. Then his last 3 starts, 6 innings, 6 earned runs, 4 innings, 8 earned runs, 4 innings, 9 earned runs. So 17 earned runs in his last 8 innings allowed. It's getting rough, Chris. And are you putting much stock into this? Is he falling on your rankings? What are your thoughts here on the recent immense struggles for Will Warren?
It's really bad. I loved Will Warren coming into the season. He was so good last year. He was in AAA all of last year, too, and he made major strides towards the end of the season. The numbers on the surface were whatever, but they were really good at the end of last year. And now this year, he's 25, or he will turn 25 actually in the next couple of days. But holy cow, dude, his last 3 starts, especially 6 earned, 8 earned, 9 earned. Ouch. That is really bad. What is that ERA over those last 3? Let's filter it out and see. 14.79 over the last 3, 14 innings there. Yeah, that's not good. 6 home runs allowed. That's brutal. So
354 batting average against.
Yeah, he's getting hit around hard, sadly. So I hope he bounces back and gets on track, but the home runs have eaten him alive. 11 home runs on the year. That will not play at all. And the walks have not been good either. He's seen the walk rate tick up a little bit.
Yeah, and he doesn't even have a clear path to playing time because, you know, obviously Garrett Cole got hurt, but the Yankees rotation has been really good. I tweeted it out earlier on Sunday. Their worst starter ERA right now is Nestor Cortez at 3.29.
That's crazy.
Everyone else is under, I believe it was under 3. Like Clark Schmidt's at like 250 something. Stroman's been quietly good. You know, it's been, Luis Gil obviously has been dominant this year. it's been a really good rotation. So I think the first question is, like, what do they do when Garrett Cole was back? Who gets the bump? Do they go six man? But Will Warren is just so buried now on the depth chart, and doesn't help that he's just pitching atrociously over the last few starts. It's three starts, so he's been bad for the entire year. I will point out that, because like, what was his ERA entering these three starts? Let's see. I'll even take out, so the five starts before that, so he had that really bad first start of the year. He had about five earned in one third of an inning. But in his five starts before these last three, he had a 2.33 ERA and a 1.83 batting average against. 33-6 strikeout to walk ratio in 27 innings. Warren is a decent pitching prospect. Yeah, he's dropped down my rankings a bit. He's still going to be like a top 200 guy or something like that. But he was pushing top 100 at a point in time, and that's just not there anymore. We'll see if he can turn it around in the coming weeks, though. Next up here, we'll go over from the Yankees to the Red Sox and go with Luis Perales, who just got the bump to Double A Portland here recently, but he has not made his debut yet. So waiting to see when that debut will be. Hopefully it's at home so I can get some live looks at Perales early on. But he's been really good this year, especially of late. And Chris, you've seen him a few times now, I believe. So what are your thoughts on Perales? Where do you have him ranked? And what do you see from him long term?
He's been progressively better year over year. And last year, seen him from Salem, obviously, to Greenville. But he was always a guy with the big riding fastball, just didn't know how to command it. I mean, he'd sit in mid-90s, but near 20 inches of vert, just all over the place. And the home runs ate him alive when he came to Greenville last year. But then this year, he was hurt, actually, early in the year, and he missed 2 weeks. And he came back, and all of a sudden was like a different pitcher. It was really weird, actually, how he came back so different, but highly impressive stuff where he fastball now sitting 97-ish, touching 99. Like, he's sitting 96, 97 mostly. He's still in a split change that's just nasty. He's got a good slider. He's mixing the cutter very well. You look at the offerings, and they are really impressive. I was really blown away about how well he has pitched, just considering he was hurt and had side soreness. He did not have surgery, disregard that. But yeah, I look at Perales and I think that this is the best pitching prospects in the Red Sox system. I don't think there's any question in my mind. And I've seen pretty much all those guys pitch at this point. I haven't seen some of the guys at the lower levels. I've missed Elmer, missed him in spring training, but I think he'll be in Greenville soon. But yeah, this guy, in my opinion, is easily the best pitching prospect in the Sox system and probably the most surefire starter just due to the stuff and how good it is.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that he's the best starter in the system right now. There's not really a ton of other, it's like, it's a great system for pitching anyway. A lot of the top guys are on the hitting side. But yeah, like I said, I wrote an article about him. I was writing some prospects to buy in the American League East. I was going two per team. I had Luis Perales as one of the guys for the Red Sox. And I texted Chris, you know, when I was writing that, because I was doing my research on Perales. And I think a lot of the thing on him entering the season was, all right, big fastball, secondaries flash decent, but were inconsistent. So that's why, you know, I was seeing some better looks in video I've seen, you know, online. But that's why I wanted to text Chris. I was like, hey, how have the secondaries looked? And you know, you said they're pretty damn good. So that's really encouraging to see. And yeah, I'm really excited to get some live looks at him later on this, maybe early next month at this point, because we're already near the end of May. But the next down here, another guy you saw recently, Chris, Santiago Suarez, still only 19 years old. Feels like he's been around a lot longer than that, but still only 19 years old. 5.54 ERA this year overall, but recently he's given up. He had three starts ago, four earned in six innings. Not terrible, but the last two, eight earned and four and a third. That was a game Chris was at. And then six earned and four and two thirds his last time out. So that combines for 14 runs in his last nine innings. You know, for the most part, the rest of his starts this year were pretty good. Had another kind of clunker, four earned and two innings in late April, but you know, started off the year really good and had two earned runs or less in five of his first six starts, including three of those with zero earned runs allowed. So a mixed bag from him performance wise game to game this year, Chris, but the stuff is pretty damn good. So, you know, would you look to buy low here on Suarez, or are you a little bit concerned right now?
I probably would. I'd buy him. I think that he's so athletic on the mound. The stuff's still good. He's mid-90s fastball. He's got good breaker and change. I think that at the end of the day, it's a buy for me, even though I saw him get absolutely obliterated and allow 8 earned runs on 3 home runs in a start. I still came away and saying, okay, the stuff's good. The delivery's polished. He's very athletic. Yeah, I think that if you can buy Suarez at a discount, it's probably a good time to do so right now, just given that he's had 2 really atrocious starts over his last 2. I think he'll be back and be better. No doubt in my mind, the stuff is there. I'll bank on that and take my chances, see what you can pay for him. Because I don't think he's going to cost you all that much.
No, probably not. And he went in the middle of that draft we did with Jesse. I forget who took him. It was probably you, or was it me? I don't even know. It might have been me, for all I remember. I can't remember fully who took who in that episode. But, yeah, Suarez still went. So, yeah, definitely a ton of upside there. Obviously, in the Rays org, do a very good job developing pitchers. It's another story of how, if they can keep them healthy or not. But definitely when it comes to pitching development, the Rays are one of the top ones in baseball and have been for a long time. And with a guy like Suarez with his stuff and his upside, I'm still willing to bank on that. And hopefully this is just a minor speed bump in his development. Our third up here is Noble Meyer, who has looked really good over his last few starts. So it's an inconsistent start to the season for Meyer. But again, he's been really good over his last 3 starts here, or last 4 starts, excuse me. 20 innings combined in those 4 starts, 0.45 ERA, 0.75 whip. Walk rate's still a little high at 13.5%. But 44.6% strikeout rate over that time and a 0.79 batting average against. So if you're ranking pitching prospects on pure upside and stuff, he'd probably be top 5. I've said before, I see some, and again, it's not a direct comp, but just like at the same age, there's a little bit of Steven Strasburg in him, the big, skinny right-hander with a 3-4 really good offerings, including a couple of breakers. I love what I see from Noble Meyer, and if he can refine the command and control a little bit and improve his strike throwing, the sky's the limit for this kid, and he legit could be by the end, now, maybe not by the end of this season, but by this time next year, he could be the number one pitching prospect in baseball, or at least top 2 or 3. That's the upside we're talking about here with Noble Meyer. So yeah, I'm definitely all in, have been, still am all in. I think he's still a decent buy right now because I don't think the perceived value is quite caught up. Because you look at the overall season line, it's still a little bit underwhelming. So I think you can use that to still buy him for a, not a cheap price tag, but a fair price tag, let's say.
Yeah, he's going to have to improve the strike throwing. That's really the biggest thing and the biggest question mark surrounding him is like, how many strikes can he throw? And right now it's a 59% strike rate, which is below average. 63 is the average strike rate. For reference, we just talked about Santiago Suarez. I just happen to see him because he's sitting right above him on the spreadsheet. He's at 71.2%. So completely different directions for both guys. And they're actually the same age. They're born one day apart. So that's wild just to see those comparisons. They're both 19 years, 4 months, 16 days for Meyer and 15 days for Suarez. So aside the point, Meyer does have all the stuff you want to see. It's a big fastball slider, and I think a pretty developed changeup too for his age. And as you mentioned, he's really picked it up over the last month. In the month of May, just 1 earned run allowed so far, and that's huge. Like, that, it was not great. It was fine in April, but it wasn't great, I'll say. And in this month, he's really taken that step forward. He has 33 strikeouts in 20 innings this month. It's crazy. 44.6%. But still walking 13.5% of guys. And why that's problematic to me is that the Florida State League ABS is very wide. Like, we're seeing guys throw strikes that shouldn't throw strikes, and Meyer's not throwing strikes at all. So, yeah, I mean, he's still young. He's still got plenty of time to develop that. But I'd imagine if he was in high A right now, that strike rate would probably look something more like 55%, and that's really not good. So the fact he's walked so many guys in the Florida State League with that pretty bad APS system, like AAA is bad, but Florida State League's even worse. It's such a big zone. So I don't know. I'm a little bit concerned, but I do think that he's obviously made some progress this month for sure.
Yeah, it's been really nice to see him. Like, these last four starts look really good. And that's the thing. Like, he needs to throw more strikes, needs to command his pitches better. But if he does, man, like, this guy is phenomenal upside and could be a future ace. And I don't throw on that ace term lightly, but he definitely projects as such if he can improve that command and control a bit here moving forward. Last down here, not a guy I thought we'd have in the down anytime this year, but Rhett Lauder has not been good since he got promoted from high A Dayton to double A Chattanooga. His first start was okay, 3 earned and 5, but since then 7 earned and 4 2/3, and then 5 earned in 1 2/3 his last time out a few days ago. So that's 12 earned in his last 6 1/3 innings. It's really two starts that he's been pretty bad in, but are you concerned at all, Chris? This is a guy that was trending as being a top 10 or even pushing top 5 pitching prospect for a lot of people now, but have you slowed your roll a little bit with that given the last few starts?
Yeah, I think that it's fair to, you look at Rhett Lauder and it's okay, like, he's fun, he's fine. I had somebody in our Discord that was at his last start and it was, so the stuff fell off pretty quick. Obviously he didn't pitch that deep into the game his last start, is 1 2/3, but I actually think that was last week. It was the, yeah, it was a start on the 17th when he went 4 2/3. He did allow 7 earned in that one. Most recent start against Mississippi, he had 5 earned runs in 1 2/3 innings, but the stuff tapered back, velocity tapered back a bit. Lauder's just such like a pitchability guy. He's gonna have to locate so well, I think, to be successful. And you can already see the bat missing trending the wrong direction. He's still throwing a lot of strikes, but the whiff rates are down since he has gotten the bump to double A, which isn't shocking. Hitters are better in double A than they are in high A. So I think that Lauder's going to have his command start over start. Like, he's going to have really good location and command of all of his pitches in order to succeed. And let's see how he bounces back. Like, the true test of adversity is how you respond. And so if Lauder comes out this week and puts up a good start, then it speaks a lot of volume about him. I like the profile. I like the pitchability. I love the command. I think the stuff's fine. I think that he's really going to have to realize that he can't miss. Like, his misses he got away with in high. He can't miss over the heart of the zone against better hitters like he's seen in double A, or he's going to get hit around. So yeah, it's something to monitor. I'm not like worried about him. I've never been the highest on him, but I still think he's a top 100 guy for sure.
Yeah, definitely top 100, and still in that top 10 pitching prospect discussion. There's a lot of names in that part of my ranking, but yeah, I still feel okay with him. I think he's going to be, I don't know if he's going to be a frontline guy, but could he be a really good number three behind like Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo? I think he's a little bit better long-term than a guy like Andrew Abbott, but I think he still has the high-end SP3 upside. So if anyone's looking to sell right now, I'd still look to buy, but the upside isn't as high as some of the other top 100 pitching prospects. I will say that, especially given this future home ballpark as well, that doesn't do him any favors. But that is going to wrap us up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms and everything going on over at RotoBaller. A lot of great stuff at all three of those spots. And we will see you again on Thursday, maybe. I guess the Chris's second child's arrival will determine that. But we will see you soon. Until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.